I do this for my culture, 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 culture. Welcome back to For the Culture, right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely, the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me this evening, folks. Tonight, we are going to shift gears, having another important and special conversation, talking about the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund. And here to give us some insight about what is this fund all about, where we are in this process, and because last week they had a hearing with City Council, with the City Council of Baltimore. So tonight we're going to get an update on that hearing and so much more. So we want to welcome to the airways of WEAA 88.9 FM. We want to welcome Kira Ritter, who serves as the transition manager for the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund, and Mr. John Morris, who is the treasurer for the Baltimore Community, Baltimore Children and Youth Fund. Kira, John, thank you so much for joining me this evening.
Thank you for having us.
John, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Oh, okay, awesome. Great, great, great. Kira, let's talk a little bit about this because there have been a lot of conversation. I remember when the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund was established, a couple of years ago, there was a sense of exuberation. People were excited, people were happy, people are saying this is where we need to put our money, this is an opportunity, and then things started happening. So break it down to us where we, first, what is the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund? What does that actually mean? And then give us some insight as to what has been happening with this fund since we've heard about it.
Sure. The Baltimore Children and Youth Fund, and let's take a step back. It's actually the Children and Youth Fund for the city of Baltimore, because
okay,
this is going to become important down the road. But the idea behind the fund is that traditional philanthropy really has not worked for our community. I've been a CEO of a nonprofit. What usually happens is you ask someone on your board to make a couple of phone calls, or you use the networks that you have, and that's how you get grant funding. Yes, you do an application, but it's really about the connections that you and your board members have. A lot of times in community, people don't have those connections with those large corporations and access to large foundations. And so those who are closest to really working on the issues that we're trying to solve have been left out in the cold. The idea, and people don't really know how decisions get made within foundations. And really the idea behind the Youth Fund was to, one, create a more equitable system, two, to drive systems change by showing that this can be done, and three, for the Youth Fund to invest in building capacity of those community-led and community-based organizations that have been doing the work for years and often not been recognized. The Youth Fund is a community resource first. That's what we want to keep talking about. We are a grant maker second. And so people were excited because when you've been starved for so long and now there's money available, you think like this is it. But the reality is, think about the hundreds of millions of dollars that have been poured into community for years and decades that have not moved the needle. Grant making alone is not going to change that. It's about how do we help build capacity? How do we strengthen the infrastructure of these organizations and pour into their leaders, so that they can then continue to do the work that they have been doing? How do we support the ecosystem and help other funders see how inequitable they've been in many of their practices and support their grantees, because oftentimes there's a check but no support, support their grantees and understanding really how to have programs that are truly youth-centered and recognize and respect the communities these young people come from.
And see, Kira, when you put in this in that context as you just laid out, it's a drop in a bucket.
Yeah.
In terms of investment, right? It's a drop in a bucket. And I want to bring John into this because, John, you are the treasurer. When there was initial conversations, this fund, people were excited because it was around 12 to 13 million, if I'm not mistaken. 12 to 13 million. So when you're saying, you know, this is a tool to bring some level of equity to neighborhoods, to nonprofit organizations, just to and some level of equity through this investment in people leadership, but you're still up against the fact that there has already been more money, not 12 to 13 million, but hundreds of millions of dollars that have been invested in communities and in people for many, many years. This is still a drop in the bucket. So give us some insight about this so that people may be feeling like, oh, this is a good step, but, you know, there's still a lot of investment that needs to be done.
Okay, let's consider what's happened in the past.
Yeah.
And I think there are several things that I think is useful to think about when you think about the Children and Youth Fund, that one of its pillars is the notion of community ownership. And then if you then think about investment, you have to ask, what were all of those dollars invested in? Was it invested in the well-being of the people, or was it invested in keeping them quiet and non-threatening? I think we get what we invest in. I think we have to ask, what was that? What was the focus of the investment?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't necessarily for the development of people to reach their aspirations. It was to reach the aspirations of the people who put the money in place. If there's going to be investment, the question that we've been asking, I think it's not just an important step, it's a necessary element that's never been there,
mm-hmm.
is what does the structure of investment look like? How does the money get to where the outcomes are secured? And for much of the work in our community that's been done has been done by people close to the issues,
right.
The people in the community.
Sure.
Dollars that have been, and you put air quotes around, invested in our community have been given to institutions that aren't grounded in our community, that aren't close to those issues at all. So they sustain solutions that don't touch us.
Yeah.
So I think a narrative that comes out if you thoughtfully look at the work of the Children Youth Fund are the grassroots organizations that we fund who aren't going to get a taste of that pipeline of dollars into large institutions that come from the outside into our communities thinking they know better about who we are than we do.
Mm.
So the idea here, several ideas. One is to get the money in the place where the greatest good can be done.
Sure.
And to begin building that infrastructure that sustains the work. And by infrastructure, I'm not using a fancy word, it's what community is.
Right.
If you think historically about the progress that Black people have made in America, it wasn't because of all of these extraordinarily endowed people who stood up as individuals. It's the ability of people to come together, to work together, to do things together in some organized structure, and we call that community. If you go down to Washington to the Smithsonian Museum of African American History and Culture, there's a whole room devoted to life after slavery, the Reconstruction. And the title of the room is Organizing for Success.
Mm.
And you can ask, what were those people organizing? I mean, they were organizing institutions. They were organizing universities or colleges. They were organizing mutual aid societies. that was how they interpreted the vehicle of their success in this post-slavery landscape. What the Children and Youth Fund is doing, and maybe the money we distribute, is the least significant of what we do. It's the organizing for success that people who are living today will attain in the years ahead. Mm. And I think we need to think about that, and I think we've kind of have been struggling with it, which is, are we an ATM for people of need, in need, or are we what we've called a community resource? And we're trying to give meaning to that term, that as a community resource, we are the thing that enables and empowers us as a community to do the things that individuals alone cannot accomplish.
Folks, I want you to join us in this conversation, 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, as we've been talking to Mr. John Morris, who serves as the treasurer for the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund, Kira Ritter, who is the transition manager for Baltimore Children and Youth Fund. And we want to hear from you as we're talking about investing in people, investing in communities, in particular, looking at this fund and where we are right now. Kira, as we are 4 days ago, a couple of days ago, last Thursday, I believe, the directors, yourself and others in the leadership of the Children and Youth Fund, there was a city council meeting around how the youth fund is being used and some level of accountability measures. Can you give us some insight as to what transpired in that conversation and in that meeting between BCYF and the City Council of Baltimore?
Sure. Within the ordinance that named, and this is where we're going to come back to BCYF and the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund, in the ordinance that named the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund, Inc., that's the 501c3, in the ordinance that named that as the permanent intermediary of the Children and Youth Fund, effective July 1 of 2020, there's a requirement that we go before City Council Committee and talk about what we've been doing. And so we did that. You know, we've been the permanent intermediary for approximately 10 months, and to give an update of what we've been doing. And we were really glad to have an opportunity to share that, because the narrative has been what other people have decided is important. And what we really had an opportunity to do was to talk about how, although typically only about 3% of funding goes to Black-led organizations, for the Youth Fund, it was 66%. 66%. And of those organizations, the majority of them have a majority board of Black and brown people and a workforce of predominantly Black and brown people. That's just the organizations themselves. We're not even talking about the work that they're doing. And so we had an opportunity to share the impact that a number of grantees have been able to make on the young people that they serve, and not just through the grant making and grant dollars and provision of services, but also the technical assistance. And this is something that a lot of people don't understand. Technical assistance really is about helping people to grow. It's sort of a professional development. Grantees often knew that they needed support in certain areas, but didn't have money to hire someone to teach them how to do things. Sometimes people don't know what they don't know. And these are public dollars, mm-hmm. which are much more challenging to manage than private funds. There are reporting requirements associated with managing public funds that don't exist in other places. And so technical assistance was also about helping organizations to meet those requirements, not only for compliance, but also this is what it takes if you're going to apply for federal dollars, for state dollars, teaching organizations how to identify other methods of resourcing, teaching organizations how to measure and evaluate their impact and tell that story. That's what we were able to share at the hearing, that all these things have not only happened, but that we've been able to provide those services for less than the 20% of overhead that City Council allows us to in the ordinance. 86% of our spending in the first 6 months of BCYF went to direct grant and technical assistance. And that's what we didn't get to get into. We have that information on our website. So it's not only that we're doing grant making, not only that we're impacting more than 20,000 young people in the city, not only that we're providing technical assistance to organizations and pouring into leaders that frankly have been pouring into communities for a long time and not been fed themselves professionally, but we did all of that for a lot less than a lot of other organizations do.
But, and I want to bring John back into this, and folks, you can join me, 410-319-8888. We're talking about the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund. But, John, there's, you know, people are saying that that there was this hearing with the city council because there was some level of uncertainty about how the funds were being used, the type of impact that was being made. Davon Love from Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle, who was one of the leaders, you know, with BCYF, he's part of the community engagement and communications team, said that there's going to be more information that's going to be given to, you know, to the public, and that's going to be released about how things are coming along. Why is there scrutiny? Because it sounds like there is some good work that's being done. It sounds like there's finally a, quote-unquote, an investment model that is really touching the people, whereas before, and especially in the nonprofit sector, you get a lot of money coming in. They funnel it through one agency, one organization, one nonprofit, and it only touches the – it only makes, you know, the percentage that it actually hits, you know, those who are closest to the problem is very, very low. So why is there scrutiny around this?
I think, again, I think we're beyond knowledge as to going back to your opinion and thinking. And let me start that I think as a community, this board is starting to ask questions that other organizations haven't.
And what you mean by that?
About what the future holds for people who look like you and me.
Okay.
Most not-for-profits in this area begin with a devalued assumption that people who look like you and me are incapable, are weak, are in trouble, are sick and pathological.
Right.
Have no understanding of who we have been over the centuries and the decades to bring us from where we were to where we are now, to see the promise and not God knows all the challenges. That drives what they invest in. They invest in the challenges with the light, with the at least historical results that we stay challenged, that no one has given a compelling narrative of what our success looks like,
mm-hmm.
so that we can invest in the success so that that funding sustains the aspirations that all of us have for our children. I mean, just think of it from an individual standpoint. You have children, Rajan?
Yes, sir. I got two of them, a boy and a girl.
Do you trust somebody else to support the future of those children?
No.
You're the one who shapes it because you have the love and care of the children, and you know where they came from.
Right.
As a community, we have kind of given that, or someone has come in and usurped those choices from us.
Okay.
And have come in to tell us, here's what you can be. And I think we've all had that story. You know, I think you've seen it in the movies and the Malcolm X movie from Spike Lee where the teacher is telling young Malcolm that he can't be a lawyer, and he wants to be.
Right, right. Putting that needle in his brain.
Yeah. Now, as a community, the same thing happens. People tell us, oh, you need to invest in these challenges we're telling you you have, that you're too violent, you're too sick, you can't do this. And the question we're asking is, well, who speaks up for the promise of the people who survived the Middle Passage and overcame slavery.
I want to stop right there. I think that's a very, very, you know, poignant question. And I want to stop right there because we got to take our final pause. But, folks, I'm inviting you to join us in this conversation, 410-319-8888. I know we're going to be checking in with Donna in a few moments. She has something to say. But I think, John, that question right there is like an overarching question, I think, about that's intricately linked to the future of Baltimore City. You know, that if there can be no progress in this city, a predominantly black city, if there isn't progress within black communities of this city. And so I think that the question that you pose is linked to that. Look, folks, we're going to take our final pause. When we come back, more with John, more with Kira from Baltimore Children and Youth Fund. We want to hear from you. 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888. Stay riding with us. It's For the Culture on WEAA.
I do this for my culture. I do this for my culture.
Peace. Welcome back to For the Culture. Right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM and WEAA.org. Absolutely the voice of the community. I'm your host, Faraji Muhammad. Thank you so much for checking in and riding with me. Tonight, folks, we're talking about the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund. We're talking about where this fund stands right now, where we are in investing in communities and in leadership from various communities that are in need of it. And most importantly, how do we become more supportive of major initiatives like this? We are joined by John Morris, who serves as the treasurer for the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund, and Ms. Kira Ritter, who serves as the transition manager for BCYF. Let's go back to into the conversation. John and Kira, again, I thank you all so much for your time this evening to kind of give us some insight and in some context around this work with the Children and Youth Fund. But I want to bring some folks into the discussion, some of our listeners. So, folks, I invite you to join us at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Let's go to Donna, then Dwayne. Donna, thank you so much for checking in. What's your take on what you've been hearing so far?
Hi, Faraji, and hello to your guests.
Hi, Donna.
From what I'm hearing, it sounds like Children and Youth Fund, it seemed like it's a very good program that's providing the funds that are given to the organization to do its act to fulfill its mission and goals. But because the population that it serves are most predominantly of African American children, it sounds like they're being scrutinized a little bit more. And I'm wondering, is it because of what happened to that other non-strong Baltimore?
Strong City?
Strong City, Baltimore. I wonder whether, you know, now that whole thing became a fiasco, I'm wondering now all these nonprofits that have a large sums of money, I wonder if they're scrutinizing this one as well and I guess some other ones. That's my first question. And my second question is, should there be a watchdog group to make sure that we protect these type of organizations from, to make sure they do their job, which it seems, from what I'm reading, it seems like they're doing their job, mm-hmm. and to make sure that they don't get torn apart and monopolized by the media and everybody because they are doing a good job. Because racism, when it comes to African-American children, seems to trickle down to the way the when a program or programs are working in favor of helping children. I'm wondering whether there's some scrutiny because of what happened to Strong City, Baltimore, and they're looking at this organization to see whether they can pick some things out to see whether something is happening here. And I'll let your guests, respond to that, because, you know, that's a concern that I don't want to see a perfect good organization be to the point where they kind of push it aside, or there's criticism because maybe some people are not getting the money that they want to get. You know, some organizations are not getting money that they feel they get. So I wanted your guests to talk about that, because, you know, that shows a concern. But it sounds like the program is working, and it should continue to work with some oversight, you know, if there's some skepticism out there by the city and the state and the funders and the sponsors. And I'll hang up and listen. And thank you.
I appreciate that, Donna. Kira, can you kind of speak to that?
Sure. So in the ordinance, as I said, the youth fund at least once a year comes before city council to talk about what we've been doing. And our budget is also approved by the Board of Estimates in June. So that will be the next time that, you know, we appear before members of the city. The youth fund has been under scrutiny since day one. So even before BCYS Inc. was running it, I mean, I'm talking about back in 2017, 2018, it was scrutinized, because what it really does, it is about a power shift. And if the youth fund is successful, then there are going to be some organizations that are going to go away that used to receive millions of dollars in funds.
So when you say that it's been scrutinized, who's been the source of the scrutiny?
We've had scrutiny from a lot of different places. But like I said, one of the things that we talk about is power shift. And if what you've had is now threatened, and that's not just white people, that's others as well. If what you've had is now threatened, then you may not want the youth fund to be successful. And as I said earlier, if you're an organization that has been starving for a long time and you thought this was it, this was your shot, and you didn't get funded, you feel a certain kind of way about that. And I've been on the other side of that. You start looking at other people's plates when you are having a hard time. If you're a well-funded organization and you're sustainable and you're not worried about tomorrow, and you see some other organizations got funded, or you see that, you know, the organization, you know, the foundation is doing something different, you're not really worried about it. You start worrying about things when you have an insufficiency or something that you have is threatened. And that's part of what we've been seeing. We are all about transparency and accountability. These are tax dollars. We don't want what happens to other places to happen to the youth fund. That's why we have been taking a lot of measures to make sure we have fiscal controls policies in place. There are some things that we identified in the ecosystem long before they came to light to other people, because we saw it. And making sure that the youth fund has what we need to be successful long term, so that we are sustainable. And really what we need are people who can identify and recognize what's actually happening, and to be sure that the youth fund isn't taken down by those who want to maintain the status quo.
All right, I'm going to stop you right there, Kira, because you now I can hear it in your voice, the passion. You about to take it up a notch. And so I want to make sure we get some more of our wonderful listeners to check in. We got Dwayne checking in. Dwayne, thank you so much. What's your take?
Hey, thanks for letting me ride. Hey.
Yes, sir.
I apologize. I don't really think that I understand what the problem is or what the challenge is here. It sounds like you're funded. It sounds like you guys are doing good work and you're getting results. So I'm trying to understand what the real problem is here. If you guys are funded, if you're getting results, and what is the challenge? I mean, it almost sounds like it kind of sounds like you need a better political leader in your office who can deal with the politics. Is that what I'm hearing? Like I'm having a difficult time understanding what the challenge is here.
That's a different point, Dwayne, and I think it's something worthy of a discussion around.
And also, if you're getting results, that's the most important thing is your results. So what results are you producing to keep yourself viable and to also the grease that helps you politically as well? So So do you lack political leadership? Do you lack a political ally who believes in what you guys are doing? Is what you're doing verifiable so that people can say this is the greatest thing since sliced bread? I'm just having a hard time understanding what the challenge is here.
That's a good point. Dwayne, I thank you so much, brother. It's always good to hear from you. John, Kira?
I'm still on. If Kira, you need more time.
I'm gonna give a quick answer. I'm gonna ask you to jump in here. The Youth Fund has recently begun to really share a lot more about what we're doing. And this is where I go back to Baltimore Children Youth Fund Inc. as a permanent intermediary is 10 months old. We haven't had a year. So I was asked the other day, do you have an annual report? I said, we will when it's been an annual. It's been 1 year. And that really has been part of the challenge. It's helping people to understand that we're still a startup organization. And so that's a very quick answer, but I'd like John to talk about really what we're seeing as the bigger issue.
Okay. We live in a city where the standards have been set by people who have profoundly failed, who have no particular interest in owning the failure. If you look at our community, I don't know that what you see is that promise consistent with Faraji that you had for your child.
Right.
Those people who are part of the larger philanthropic community, who are part of the larger civic community, who look after a city that's predominantly black and see this result, have two options. They can own this as a failure that they adopted, or they can point the finger at somebody else, usually the people who are not meeting their promise. And that's what's consistently happened. Where we are is we're asking a question about investment. I'm going to go back to investment again. Are we investing in the success of our people? Or are we investing in their continued failure? I don't think it's the latter. We're looking to do the former, and the practices that go with the former are new and have never been effectively articulated. And we're kind of writing that book right now. That's the challenge to Dwayne. Have we created that environment that has advanced and advocated and championed the success of black people, let alone allow black people to articulate what that looks like? We're in the process of trying to not just do that ourselves, but to engage the community in a partnership where we get to do it for ourselves. So when you ask, well, what are we lacking? We're lacking that effective engagement from our community in which they're in it with us, in which they are providing the support, that they're the ones who appropriately are due the oversight. That the oversight issue has always gone to the money, not to the outcome. When there are the kinds of challenges we know personally in our community that have been sustained over years and years of hundreds of millions of dollars being thrown at our community that have been sopped up by other not-for-profits.
Yeah.
No one has said, let's go do oversight over why this money is so stupidly spent. What they want to look at is, who's holding on to the money so that nobody goes off to Venezuela on a vacation?
Right.
That's not the investment we're talking about.
And I get that. And that's and it's so interesting, John, because one of my Facebook watchers checked in and asked that question. Cortez says, where's the OIG oversight? This is public dollars we are talking about that can be wasted towards useless programs. And in a time where we've seen this kind of story play out, not saying, of course, this is what's going on with BCYF, but we've seen the stories of millions of dollars coming into one space, one group, one entity. And then, you know, folks have been jaded by those who take in money and then claim that they're going to do something for the people and then not seeing those results that you said that should be the real metric of this. So how do you assure folks who just listening to this conversation may not have any context about, you know, where this situation has started and is hearing that you got money that's supposed to be allocated to young people for youth services and to the investment of communities? How do you assure them that that money won't be used for useless programs?
Well, what we're starting with our being here is to begin a dialogue with our own community about we need to articulate in terms so clear they cannot be misunderstood outside our community what our expectations are. And how do we deal with them and measure them with respect to the kind of intervention that entities, black or white, like the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund would be engaging in? And we need to say that out loud to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is we're suggesting a different kind of conversation with the black community than some of the major not-for-profits are having or even would even dare attempt. And we're having that right now. So the questions, if you're going to ask us the question, then we've got to find a way to ask it of the other people out there.
Yeah.
So we change the larger conversation that they're having among themselves about us to be answerable to us.
Yeah. I agree with you there. I agree with you there. Folks, you can join us in this conversation as we're talking about the Baltimore Children and Youth Fund. I'm joined by John Morris, who serves as the treasurer for BCYF, and Kira Ritter, who is the transition manager. And so if we're talking about changing the conversation, Kira, for us, it's having the conversation on a people level, right? Because I feel like, and I'm sure you and John and others, you understand this dynamic that exists in Baltimore City. When it comes to money, those conversations aren't had within on a community level. They're not had among organizations. And so the big element of this democratic system that we all are part of, the big factor, the big determining factor, the big voice in the room, which is the people, are not being heard. And you mentioned that this is about changing the power dynamics, changing the power structure in this city. But some people may not even recognize, Kira, that there is power in this effort, and that this effort also represents a change in power. How do we get people to even see that part of this initiative?
I didn't want to usurp your time.
Kira?
That is, I'm sorry, sir. That's a really great question. I will tell you that we actually started our conversation with our grantees. I mean, there were grantees that really did not understand that this is what this is about.
Yeah.
And so we've been having that conversation, and it's tricky because some people will tell you, you know, you're wearing a funder hat, and you shouldn't be having that conversation with a funder hat. But
right.
As you said, I believe in real talk. And so having had some of those conversations with grantees, I think that I want to say that City Council has been very supportive of this, and I want to acknowledge that. Prior administration, current administration, really understanding, like taking the time to listen and understand what we're doing and believing that it is time to have this conversation. I think it'd be good for John to jump in here, but this is really the question that you asked is really what we're working on.
John, what's your take? And then I'm going to go back to our phone lines because we got Ayanna on. John,
okay.
what can you give us?
We are the solution to our problems. You know, I guess the line from several administrations ago with President Obama. Where are the people we've been waiting for?
Mm-hmm.
That we need black people and brown people solving the problems, and we need to liberate those people, at least the talent, the energy that those people embody. And I don't know of any not-for-profit that does it better than this one.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Let's go back to the phone line. I like how you kept that succinct on that one, John. 410-319-8888. Ayanna, thank you so much for checking in. What did you, based on what you've been hearing, Ayanna, what's your take?
Hi, Taraji.
Hey.
Hi, everybody. So I'm going in a different direction. My goddaughter actually works for the city in a particular, another program. And we were talking the other day about, you know, I was driving downtown and I, you know, see the squeegee kids. And I actually called some of my friends in Leaders of a Beautiful Struggle and asked, you know, a question about, I couldn't get through at the time to talk to the person just in the middle of the height of the pandemic and all that. But I understood there was a program that was created to support those young people. And when I was talking to my goddaughter, she was saying, yeah, they have these programs, but then there's a cap to the number of people that can be a part of them, right? They only accept a certain number of kids and what have you. And so my question is basically like, okay, so we know we have this overwhelming majority of young people that are in need of these specific, you know, this specific aid or these specific areas of need. And then, you know, what is happening for the kids, like those programs where there's that cap and those that are not available, you know, not able to receive that help, where can they go? What are the outliers? What are the other opportunities for them?
Great question. Thank you so much, Ayanna, for checking in. It's good to hear from you. John or Kira?
One of the things that the Youth Fund is doing, I mean, first we have to be honest. $12 million is not going to reach all 80,000-plus young people in the city of Baltimore.
Mm.
It's just not. There were $75 million in requests when we did an open call for applications, and those were just people who could put together an application and get it in by the deadline.
I don't want you to rush past that part. $75 million
yes.
in the application itself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
And like I said, that doesn't include people who had shown up at community capacity building sessions and had planned to submit an application. Because there were some of those folks that didn't even get through the application process. So we had $75 million in official requests for funding for what was going to be approximately a $10 million deployment. Every time, not just for the Youth Fund, but for every foundation that has a call for applications, the need is significantly greater than the amount of funds available. One of the things that the Youth Fund is doing is looking at aligned grant making with programs that are already out there, pools of funds that are already supporting other initiatives to fill and close some of that gap. That's part of what BCYF is actually here for, again, to support the ecosystem. That does not help the specific, that may not help the people that this young woman is now talking about. It may not reach all of those young people. We have to be honest about that. And so the question becomes, how do we support them? The best that we can do is to do like we did last year, which is these are the programs that we have that have openings that can support young people and making sure that they can scale, which is what the technical assistance is about, and have additional seats. We are not going to catch every young person or every young adult every day. That is unrealistic for where we are today. And so we are going to have young people who do not have services. That's something that we need to address. But if we can improve the ecosystem
mm-hmm.
and support some of these other programs that are out there, those young people become fewer and further between.
Mm.
That's really what we're here for. But it didn't happen overnight. Hundreds of millions of dollars have been invested and have missed these young people and young adults. They've missed generations. We're working towards being able to close that gap.
here's an insight that I think is helpful. I don't want to discourage anybody out there, and I think, you know, there may be some sense that, well, if there's not a program out there that we can help galvanize to direct at a problem, we're out of luck. What the fund is ultimately about is recognizing that people have a remarkable genius of solving problems that nobody sees yet. So your caller who called in seeing a problem, I would encourage her to take action, to put her thoughts into operation. And the encouragement is not that we're going to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We're there to underwrite the solutions that come from this community.
Mm.
And we trust the genius of these people who are close to the problem, who have a direct interest in seeing them solved, to solve them. The challenge of philanthropy in this area is that you have to already be a not-for-profit to get funded as a not-for-profit. And what the fund has been reaching those inspired individuals who in the past had operated God knows how, who now have a way of accessing charitable dollars, and we put them in that stream so they can sustain what they do. What's so remarkable about many of the stories of the grantees we've undertaken to fund is that these are truly grassroots stories. These are wonderful tales from the grassroots of people finding solutions and putting them in operation.
John, I'm gonna, you know, we got a few moments left, so I wanna. You and Kira, just to put it out there, because people have been hearing this conversation. As you know, the calls have coming through about understanding the dynamics of what this fund is all about, and more importantly, the impact that it has been making and is potentially can continue to make. How can people be supportive of this? What's the next step for BCYF?
Yeah. I'm happy to go forward. I would know what the next step. A next step for people is to follow what we do. And as we reach out to engage you, engage us as we've been engaged by your listening. We need to begin a dialogue with our own community about how to utilize this fund. One of the ideas that the foundation for this fund is that it's to be participatory. That we're not some, you know, special elite that comes and decides how money is given out. We're inviting participation. So while I think I would love to come here and say, here are the numbers you call, here are the places you fill in, but we're trying to invent that participatory structure now.
Okay. Kira, did you want to add anything else?
I fully concur with what John just said. And I would also say it was interesting to hear the callers today. They listened to the narrative, and they said, I don't understand the problem. The program is working. It's having results. Councilman Zeke Cohen said there's no evidence of corruption. What I would ask people is, when you hear people talking about the youth fund and saying things that aren't true, speak up. You know what's accurate now. Help people identify the facts. Send them to the website. Because otherwise these things take on a life of their own, and then suddenly there's a narrative that the youth fund is something other than it's not.
Mm.
We need to work together.
A community resource that's out there for you to tap in will disappear. So our sustainability is in your hands.
So true.
There it is. The sustainability of the investment is in our hands. I want to thank both of you for coming on the show tonight. Just to be clear and to have this conversation, to give a lot of us more insight about BCYF and the work that BCYF is doing. I want to thank you, Kira Ritter, for being the transition manager for BCYF. And John Morris, thank you so much, sir, for your work as the treasurer. Is there a, I know that there is a website that folks can definitely check out to get more information to stay up to date about what's going on. Can you put out that website information?
Yes, it's bcyfund.org. It's bcyfund.org. There's a link for the slideshow that was presented at the council hearing. There were a number of slides that we didn't get to. That goes into a lot of detail about the work that grantees have done, some demographic information about those organizations, and very detailed slides about how BCYF funds were spent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. John, Kira, thank you so much for being on the show tonight. We truly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Folks, that's going to do it for us. I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us this evening, both online and on air. Tomorrow, now, if my colleague Dr. K don't get to this, but we're going to have to get into it. Derek Chauvin's lawyer has filed a motion seeking a new trial. Apparently, he's alleging that there's prosecutorial and jury misconduct and saying a change of venue should have been granted. We'll talk a little bit about that tomorrow here on For the Culture. Folks, stay tuned. Up next is Lolo with In the Groove. I want to thank my dynamic team for making the show happen tonight. My man Dre Day on the boards and my producer, Demi Goff. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Also, to later on this week, on Thursday, we're going to be checking in with Commissioner Michael Harrison from the Baltimore City Police Department. So we'll also talk to him about what's been going on around the country, around policing, and get his take on the staffing issues and city services. So you don't want to miss that conversation. That's on Thursday. All right. As always, never be afraid to challenge what's wrong. Stand for what's right while being yourself in the process. I look forward to chatting with you tomorrow, God willing, for another exciting edition of For the Culture. And, of course, make sure you stay tuned for Lolo. Also, make sure you download us on all your smartphone devices at WEAA. Make sure you have that conversation. Check us out on our website at weaa.org and so much more. I look forward to talking to you soon. And God willing, we'll check back in. And, of course, keep your station locked to where you got it. You're tuned into WEAA 88.9 FM and weaa.org. Absolutely, the voice of the community. And remember, Baltimore, do more, but be exceptionally good for the culture. Peace.